Welcome to Sideline Sleuths, a true crime podcast all about the tragic yet fascinating cases no one can seem to get enough of. I'm Megan.
And I'm Jasmine.
We're so glad you're listening. If you like being an armchair detective, you'll love being a sideline sleuth. Today we're going to talk about the murder of a 19-year-old Native American woman named Faith Hedgepeth, who was murdered in 2012. She was just weeks shy of celebrating her 20th birthday. At the time of her death, she was a student at UNC Chapel Hill. Her body was discovered by her friend and roommate, Karina Rosario, who was accompanied by their mutual friend, Marisol Rangel. They found her shortly after 11 a.m. on September 7, 2012. Despite lots of evidence left behind at the scene and a DNA profile, police have not been able to determine who murdered Faith, and her case remains unsolved more than 7 years later.
Wow.
So here's what we know. Faith was just starting her third year at the university when she was killed. She took the previous spring semester off and moved into an off-campus apartment with her friend Karina Rosario and Karina's then-boyfriend, Eric Tecoy Jones. Eric and Karina had a volatile relationship that was marked with domestic violence. Oh. So eventually the pair broke up and Eric moved out. However, he broke into the apartment on more than one occasion and reportedly even threatened to kill Faith, who he saw as an obstacle in reconciling with Karina.
Dang.
Karina got a restraining order against Eric in July of 2012, so just 2 months before Faith's death, after he kicked two doors off the hinges in their apartment. The audacity. Yeah. Witnesses also reported multiple instances where Karina was seen with visible injuries. Reportedly, Faith had encouraged or was at least supportive of Karina getting the protective order. And that's why Eric didn't like Faith.
Oh, this is horrible. I know you're not even done, but...
Just getting started. Faith was last known to be alive in the very early morning hours of September 7th. She and Karina went to a nightclub together called The Thrill. The pair left there shortly after 2 a.m., and this is seen on club surveillance. Later in the morning, Karina, the roommate, went back out with a different friend. This was around 4:30 in the morning, assuming that Faith was asleep inside. When Karina arrived back at the apartment later in the morning with Marisol, she discovered Faith's blood-covered and partially nude body wrapped in a blanket. She had been beaten over the head with an empty liquor bottle. Okay, so let's talk about the timeline of events and Faith's last known interactions. On Thursday, September 6, 2012, Faith went to an event for a Native American sorority she was hoping to join. Later that evening, around 8 p.m., she and Karina went to the school's library to study. While in the library, Faith was texting her dad between 8:30 and 9 that night. She left for a little bit and came back around 11:30. And then she and Karina headed back to their apartment and got there around midnight. At 12:40 a.m., the girls got to The Thrill, a nightclub in Chapel Hill that allowed people under 21 to enter.
Okay.
Surveillance at the club shows the girls leaving at 2:06 in the morning. Reportedly, Karina told Faith that she wasn't feeling well, and that's why they left. By 3 a.m., the girls are back at their apartment. The occupant in the unit below Faith and Karina reported to have heard three thumping noises in the apartment around that time, so like 3 a.m.-ish.
So when they returned.
Yeah.
Questions are emerging.
The neighbor said it sounded like something heavy was being dropped or maybe some furniture was flipped over. Around 3 a.m.
So loud.
Something loud, yeah. Around 3 a.m., Faith's Facebook account was also accessed. At 3:40 a.m., a text was sent from Faith's phone to a guy named Brandon Edwards and said, quote, "Hey, B, can you come over here, please? Rosario needs you more than you know. Please let her know you care," end quote. No more activity ever comes from Faith's phone.
Sorry, am I supposed to know who Rosario is?
Karina Rosario.
Oh, my bad. Yeah,
so the roommate. But apparently, okay. And I'm glad you mentioned that, apparently she often went by her last name.
Okay.
So
cute.
Yeah. Okay. It's the maid from Will and Grace. Did you watch that show?
No, I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Best show ever on television. I own all 8 seasons on DVD. My son's dad gave it to me when we were in college. Uh-huh. All of them. It's amazing. And now you can just watch them on some streaming device. But whatever, I have all 8 seasons on DVD.
Living a time.
Yeah. Okay. So at 4:16 a.m., Brandon replies, not knowing who sent the text, and asked basically, like, who is this? Faith doesn't reply. Karina's phone records show that at the same time approximately that Faith texted Brandon, telling him to come over, she was also trying to call Brandon, but he didn't answer her either.
So he doesn't recognize her number?
Faith's number, I guess.
Okay.
I think he was, at some point, a love interest of Karina's, maybe?
Jeez. Poor Faith seems like really entangled in Karina's love life.
Yeah, facts. So when Brandon doesn't answer, Karina reaches out to a guy named Jordan McCrary. At 4:25 in the morning, she leaves their apartment to get in Jordan's car, believing, allegedly, that Faith was asleep in her room. Karina said she did not lock the apartment when she left.
Oh. Okay. She's very mean to her friend. I'm judging. But we left the club because you didn't feel well.
And then why are you going back out at 4:30 if you didn't feel good?
And then why aren't you locking up?
Especially when you have a crazy ex-boyfriend. Like, that's just negligent.
Yeah, I feel like if you're afraid of that and you've had a history of that, you lock your doors.
Yeah, all the time.
You lock your windows.
Yeah,
you lock you lock everything.
So Jordan gets there and he gives her a ride to a different friend's house. They get there at like 4:30 something. And Karina spends the night there. Around 10:30 in the morning, she tries to call Faith to get a ride home, but Faith doesn't answer. So she calls another friend, Marisol Rangel, to take her home instead. Just before 11 a.m., they entered the apartment and called out to Faith, who did not reply. So they go into her room and find the crime scene. Karina calls 911 and says, "Hi, I just walked into my apartment, and my friend is just, like, she's unconscious. Actually, we have this audio, and we're going to play it for you now."
11:01 a.m., 44 seconds, September 7, 2012. 911, where is your emergency?
I just walked into my apartment and my friend just like sent me unconscious.
Okay, what's your address, ma'am?
I live at Halton Estes View.
Give me the address.
I just moved here. I'm about to get it. Oh my god. It's 5639 Old Chapel Hill Road in Durham.
Okay, repeat it to me so I make sure I've got it correct.
Okay. 5639 Old Chapel Hill Road. It's apartment 1602.
1602?
Yes.
What's the phone number you're calling from?
201-321-8075.
Okay, you say your friend is unconscious?
He's unconscious. I just walked in the apartment and there's blood. Okay, listen to me.
Somebody's already sending me ambulance. Okay, I need to get some information from you, and I'm gonna tell you how to help her. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. How old is she?
She's 19.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't want to touch her, but.
Listen to me. Is she breathing?
I don't know.
You need to check and see. Is she breathing?
I don't think so.
Okay, listen to me.
There's blood everywhere.
There's what?
There's blood everywhere.
Okay.
I don't know what happened.
Okay, is she on her back or is she on her... laying on her stomach?
She's on her back, but, like, I think she fell off the bed because she's, like, off the bed.
listen to me, all right?
Is someone coming?
Yes, I've got somebody coming. I need for you to help her. I need for you to go up to her. We need to see if she's breathing or not. Okay?
I don't think so.
Okay. Listen to me. Go up. The paramedics are on their way. I want you to stay on the line. I'm going to tell you what to do next, all right? Are you right by her now?
Yes.
Okay. Listen carefully. She's not moving. Okay.
No.
Will you touch her arm? Tell me, how does she feel?
She's not moving.
Okay, ma'am. We need to find out if we can help her or not. You've got to, do as I'm asking so we can help her. All right?
Okay.
If you can, lay her flat on her back. Remove any pillows.
Lay her flat on her back?
Flat on her back. Remove any pillows.
Okay.
Okay. Kneel next to her. Look in her mouth for food or vomit. Okay, kneel next to her, look in her mouth for food or vomit. Tell me something. Listen to me. What is your name?
I'm sorry. I'm really tired.
It's okay, honey. It's okay, honey.
Everywhere. I don't know.
Okay, all right. Listen to me. When you touch her, how does she feel? Does she feel warm?
No, she feels cold.
She feels cold? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Don't touch anything else, okay? Don't touch anything else.
Amazing.
Okay, they're on their way. I've got police on the way to you, and I've got medics on the way. Okay?
I can't believe this.
Okay. What room is she in?
She's in my bedroom.
Okay, I want you to go back into the living room, okay?
Okay.
You stay on the phone with me.
Okay. Okay.
Are they in there with you? They coming in?
Yes. Thank you.
Oh, okay, honey. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
A lot of thoughts.
Speechless almost, but lots of thoughts.
Okay, so in general, I was really uncomfortable. Like, the call just made me uncomfortable. Like, several times I was like, how long is this call?
Yeah.
How long is that call?
7 minutes, yeah.
Okay, that's not an unusually long call. No. It just felt.
So, because they weren't making any progress. She just kept repeating the same stuff.
Yeah, which is, And then, obviously, where is Marisol?
Like, so she says, I don't want you to be alone. And Karina's not like.
I'm not alone.
My friend is. She's just like, oh, okay. Like, you don't hear Marisol. She doesn't say, my friend and I. She says.
I just got home. I just got home, right?
Yeah, it says, I just walked into my apartment and my friend is, like, unconscious. Not, like, we or anything. Or our apartment, even. I just walked into my apartment. It's your apartment now because your roommate's dead.
I guess. I mean, to me, mostly it was, like, the crying and the information that was offered felt, it just felt. Not a superficial. I was made uncomfortable.
Yeah. I just felt like it wasn't. She was telling you things you didn't ask and not telling you things you did ask.
Yeah, even her name. Yeah. Like, what's your name?
What's your name?
Just feels like somebody's been in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody was in there.
Yeah, clearly.
Your friend is dead.
Yeah. She didn't bludgeon herself with a liquor bottle. But so, yeah. And then she asked her where she lives and she's like, I just moved here. Like, I don't know. But I thought they moved in the spring because Faith took the semester off.
Because Eric
moved out in the summer. So you've probably lived there for like 6 months. What do you mean you don't know?
How do you not know your address?
After 6 months.
You said this was in
2012. So it's not like super ancient. I don't
know. Yeah, you getting stuff on Amazon by that point.
Yeah, something. I don't know.
Are you? I don't know.
I don't know. And then, Well.
Yeah, I was getting stuff on Amazon when I was in college.
When this happened, I was pregnant. So for sure, I was Amazon momming it like crazy.
Yeah.
But we will talk more about the problems I have with this call whenever we get to suspects.
More than anything else, yes, a lot of questions and a lot of reservations after hearing that call. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say I don't really judge, but I'm pretty judgy. I'm just going to accept it at this point.
The most judgy. So before we talk more about the call, I want to talk about what the police found when they arrived on the scene. So the call ends with police and first responders arriving, and that's when Karina gets off the phone. Inside the second floor apartment, they find the bedroom covered in blood. There's a pool of blood by Faith's body on the floor, and then there's also blood spatter on the walls and closet door, and a significant amount of blood on the pillows. Faith isn't on the bed, but kind of propped up beside it. Her shirt was pulled up, and her body was naked from the waist down.
Oh.
She has cuts and bruises on her knuckles, indicating that she put up a fight. Near her body, police found a note written on a fast food bag. Now, we are very conscious about our language here because in order for the podcast to be available on all platforms, we can't have the E for explicit rating. And we also have students who listen to these episodes. So, there is profanity in the note, and it's the B word. So I'm just going to say B in place of the actual word.
How wholesome.
Yeah. So this is what is written. I'm not stupid, be jealous. But there's no punctuation. So I'm not sure if it's meant to be read. Okay, so it's written, I'm not stupid, underneath that, be, underneath that, jealous. But I'm not sure if it's meant to be read like, I'm not stupid, comma, be.
And this is what I tell my students every day.
Yeah, so exactly.
Commas are important.
Important. Or is it saying like, I'm not stupid, period, be, comma, jealous. So it's like, be jealous, its own sentence?
Either way, it is
poorly written.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So they're not there for English. That's not their major at UNC. But like, so is it written, I'm not stupid, period, be jealous? Is it written, I'm not stupid, be jealous? Or is it, I'm not stupid, be jealous? Like,
yeah.
There's no punctuation. But either way, somebody is the B word. Somebody's not stupid, and somebody's jealous about it.
Okay. On a fast food bag, you said?
Yeah, on the bed.
This is cryptic.
So,
Leave your notes on fast food bags at crime scenes, guys, if you're going to do it, just to
give us... Yeah, just the closest thing you can find. Just scrawl it on there.
Okay.
So, they discover that Faith has also been sexually assaulted.
Yeah, I was going to say she's naked from the waist down.
And there's a used tampon near her body as well.
Oh!
A sexual assault kit was done that showed the presence of semen that matched other DNA evidence collected at the crime scene.
Okay, so...
So, DNA was also found on the pen that wrote the note, as well as on the bottle that was the murder weapon.
Okay.
But police noted that it was weird that there was blood all over the room, but there wasn't any blood on the note. So, like, whoever, they killed her and then they, like, washed their hands and then wrote the note.
Ah, so it's staged in some capacity.
So, like, they didn't just kill her and, like, skedaddle. Yeah. They killed her, washed their hands, and wrote this, I'm not stupid, be jealous. I'm not stupid, be jealous. I don't know.
Very cryptic. Or wrote the note, she found the note,
then they killed her. But wouldn't the blood spatter? Because there's blood all over the room.
You're absolutely
wouldn't
right.
Wouldn't it have got on the note? Girl! That's just put there later? Investigate,
what are you
consultant.
Implying to? Yeah.
You don't need society.
You don't need this life no more.
Yeah, I would love that. Sorry, Chad, because I know your wife. Chad's our boss. I know your wife listens to our podcast. We love you. I'm not planning on leaving. But if I get my break to be an investigative consultant.
Just let her go with God.
Yeah. Just let me go with God. So, Raleigh, North Carolina, homicide detective Chris Morgan thinks that the note at the crime scene was staged and that the killer or the main person responsible was left-handed because Faith had a lot of wounds on the right side of her body.
I see.
So the handwriting looks terrible. So, like, I guess they wrote it with maybe not their dominant hand. So I guess maybe they didn't write it with their dominant hand. So it's a left-handed person. They assaulted her with their left hand, but they maybe wrote the note with their right hand.
That they're really trying to be crafty. You know, sandwich bag was all it took for me.
Yeah. So we're going to lump suspects and theories in together here. Immediately, attention turned to a few people as potential suspects, including the men that Faith interacted with at the club, The Thrill, with her roommate.
That night.
Then, of course, Karina is a suspect, the roommate, and Karina's ex-boyfriend, Eric Jones. The police documents, there's a link to them in our source list, state that Eric, quote, resented Hedgepeth, that's Faith's last name, because of her influence over Rosario. Several witnesses also advised that Eric considered Hedgepeth as a barrier to their relationship, end quote. The DNA profile created from the semen detected in Faith's rape kit matched the DNA on the pen and on the rum bottle, but it did not match Eric Jones.
Okay.
It was also not a match for Jordan McCrary, the man who picked up Karina that night. Well, that morning, 4 o'clock, 4:30-ish.
Gotcha.
They ran the DNA against hundreds of people, and it didn't match any of them.
Wow.
Karina stopped talking to the media, but she was questioned numerous times by police over the years. They said over 10, but that she has remained cooperative. There was a mountain of evidence in the case, but nothing that investigators could make stick to anyone.
Gosh.
Many people feel like Karina seems to know more than she's saying. First, why did you leave the door unlocked when you left? Why did you feel sick at the club at 2 a.m., but then well enough to leave again at 4:30? If you arrived back at the apartment with Marisol, why is there no mention of her in the 911 call? She also never said Faith's name one single time in the call about finding Faith's body. She says, my friend, but she never, like, obviously the 911 person doesn't know your friend's name, but, like, kind of moment, you're going to be like, Faith is blah, blah, blah. Or, like, you know, you're just going to say it, like, if I called 911 about you, at some point I'm going to identify you as being Jasmine. But she just says, like,
my friend.
I walked into my apartment, my friend. Like, she never says Faith.
And when you break down, are you going to?
I'm going to talk about the analysis.
Okay.
So.
Because I was like, oh, I might know things about this, but I probably don't.
So this guy named Peter Hyatt is a statement analyst, and he is the guy behind the company Hyatt Analysis, which teaches statement analysis. Well, I'm saying analysis in some form a lot, and analytical interviewing to law enforcement. And he also has a blog called, you guessed it, Statement Analysis. So here is his take on that 911 call. The dispatcher is like, where's your emergency? She's asking for a location. I'm sure I have not done this properly in 911 calls every time, because I probably thought they're saying, what is your emergency? My first instinct is not going to be to tell you where I am. It's going to be to tell you what just happened, especially if I'm, like, in a frenzy. So I think it's not necessarily a big deal that Karina doesn't immediately give the location. But let me tell you what he thinks. He says that you should immediately provide the dispatcher with your location, but if you don't, whatever you tell them first reveals the caller's priority and what you want police to know first. Like, what do you think is the most important thing for the police to know? And what did Karina say? Let's listen to that again.
I just want to tell my husband and my friend unconscious.
Hi, I just walked into my apartment and my friend is just like, she's unconscious? So according to Hyatt, by saying this, that means the very first thing she wanted investigators to know was that she was not in her apartment and she walked into the situation. So she just like happened upon this.
Gotcha.
I just walked into my apartment and my friend is just like, she's unconscious.
As opposed to, My friend's unconscious. Hurry.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I just, like, you wanted them to know first that you happened upon it. He said rather than providing the location, which would allow emergency personnel to come help the victim, she first starts off with establishing an alibi. He says, quote, we expect to hear an innocent caller state the location of an emergency and what is wrong, asking for help for the victim. That she went to where she herself lives put focus on herself and not on the bleeding victim. With a bleeding friend in her bedroom, that is not the most expected response, but to parrot back language is the easiest in which to answer questions. I cannot put much weight into this, but still take note of it, end quote. She also repeatedly mentions that she just walked in. Hyatt said, quote, anything repeated is sensitive or important enough to have to need to emphasize it via repetition, end quote. So, like, it just happened.
Yeah. If she would said it later, just like, I just walked in. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
like,
they're asking her questions, and she's like, I have no idea. I just walked. That'd be different. But she tells you first, I just walked in to my apartment.
I feel you. I mean, I don't know why it made me uncomfortable, but that first 7 seconds was like, what?
The dispatcher tells Karina to listen to her so that she can tell her how to help her friend. And what does Karina say back?
I don't know. I don't want to touch her, but...
I don't want to touch her? You wouldn't even hesitate. Like, if I walked into a room and you are bleeding, I am touching you. I am on the phone with 911 while I am trying to stop bleed. I don't want to touch her? Like, you would not hesitate to render aid, even to a stranger, probably.
Yeah, I mean, even as teachers, they have to train us not to touch bleeding kids.
Yeah. Hyatt says, quote, it is likely that the caller knows that the vital medical information that is about to be given to her is a direction of first aid. She is reluctant to apply first aid, but will do so to follow directions. Can you imagine being reluctant to render aid to your roommate that you just saw?
To your friend.
Friend, yeah. I can't.
I've had roommates I do not like that I would
Same. Hyatt wonders, does the caller know the victim is beyond first aid? He says, quote, the assertion, I don't want to touch her, but, is consistent with death. People don't want to touch dead bodies, end quote. But they would touch somebody they felt like they could help. Mm-hmm. So does she already know that Faith is dead?
I mean, if I walk into a room and there's blood and I call your name, you don't answer, I would assess probably that you're dead.
But she's telling the 911 lady that she's unconscious.
Right. So there's,
discrepancy for sure. Later in the call, Karina says, I don't know what happened. But she wasn't asked if she knew what happened. She just offers that up. Hyatt called it negation and said it could be because she feared she might be blamed for the incident. When dispatch asks if she's on her back or if she's laying on her stomach, Karina says, quote, I think she fell off the bed because she's, like, off the bed. There's blood all over the pillows, like in the comforter, and I just don't know what happened, end quote.
Of course you don't know what happened if you
weren't there. You just walked into your apartment. But
yeah, none of us know what happened.
I'll play that part for you again.
I don't know what happened.
Okay, is she on her back or is she on her, laying on her stomach?
She's on her back, but I think she fell off the bed because she's, like, off the bed. There's blood all over the pillows, like, in the comforter. I just don't know what happened.
Hyatt says this is Karina offering a hypothesis as to what might have happened while the dispatcher is attempting to give her first aid instructions. And if you noticed, she also repeated the phrase, "I just don't know what happened." Hyatt said there could be a few reasons for this. One, because she actually does know what happened. Two, because she doesn't know what happened but is afraid she will be accused of knowing. And three, she has an idea about who did this or what happened. Later she says, "I'm sorry. I'm really..." And then you can't make out exactly what she's saying, but she might say, "I'm really trying. There's blood everywhere. I don't know where it came from." Hyatt says this is also negation because she was not asked about the source of the blood, and that "I'm sorry" is only usually said in 911 calls when the caller has guilty knowledge. So that leaves the question, was Karina involved in her roommate's death, or does she have prior knowledge about what happened to Faith? Faith's dad thinks she knows something. And neighbor said Karina had a, quote, "serene demeanor" when she was outside waiting for police that day. So, like, theatrics on the phone, but serene?
They're not that great, the theatrics.
Yeah.
Yes.
So she was also not at UNC to study theater.
Theater.
Yeah.
Well, she was.
And she was failing.
Huh.
In early 2013, police worked with the FBI to create a profile of the suspect. The FBI's behavioral analysis unit concluded that it is likely the suspect was someone she knew or someone very familiar with Faith, maybe even someone who lived near her previously. Mm. They have probably also made comments about her in the past or been very interested in the case, and their behavior likely noticeably changed after the murder. The police sent the DNA recovered from the scene to a company called Paraben Nano Labs in Virginia to have a composite sketch created of the killer. I sent you that snapshot that they made.
Yes.
Ellen Graytak, who is the director of bioinformatics at Paraben Nano Labs, said, quote, "You can be very confident that this is not a white person. This is not a person of African descent. This is a person who is very strongly Native American and European mixed ancestry or Latino," end quote.
Hmm.
The snapshot created said that it was a male individual with the majority of their ancestral origins coming from Central America and Southwest Europe. He has olive skin with hazel or brown eyes. He has black hair with little to no freckles. But here's the thing. There's some really compelling evidence that it's not a person responsible for Faith's murder, but instead people. Two males and a female, actually.
Where does this come from?
So Faith accidentally pocket dialed a friend the night she was murdered.
Are you...
No. Like, I have chills right now. Ugh. And many people think she actually did that during her murder, and the voicemail she left is actual audio of her being killed.
Oh, that's...
The timestamp on the voicemail is from a time that she would have been at the Thrill, but what forensic audio experts heard of the voicemail lead people to think it definitely didn't happen there. And there's also been reports of voicemail timestamping being off by several hours. It was like a known phone glitch around this time period.
Okay.
And what they hear also gives you an idea of who two of the three assailants might be. Expert Arlo West analyzed the call, and what he concluded is chilling. Law enforcement deemed the voicemail undecipherable, but then did ask him for his transcript when he was finished with his analysis. Experts concluded that during the voicemail, there is a physical altercation. They allege you can hear her crying and screaming and pleading for help. The experts think you can hear another woman and two men in the call, too.
Oh my gosh.
And you can hear names.
Oh my gosh.
Eric and Rosie. I listened to clips of this, and that had the expert like pausing between things, saying what he heard. And though I know that's really suggestive, I can hear it too. You can hear the phrases, "I think she's dying," and "I can't believe you really did it, Rosie." You can also hear someone say their hands are on fire, and you can hear the words "duct tape." There also appears to be someone singing, or rapping rather, which, along with the timestamp, is what led police to believe that this was recorded at the Thrill. But that expert says you don't hear any instruments. You just hear somebody's voice with, like, a tune, I guess. So, I don't know. But, coincidentally, Eric is the name of Karina's ex-boyfriend who threatened Faith in the past. And Karina's last name is Rosario. And Faith called her Rosario in a text earlier, so meaning she went by her last name. So, could Karina be the Rosie from the voicemail? There are no copies available of just that voicemail, so I can only play bits and pieces of it. But if you're interested in hearing it, along with what Arlo West thinks is happening in it, Crime Watch Daily has uploaded several videos to YouTube about it, and part four is the one where they play the voicemail with Arlo West's narration. Here are a few clips. So the first one was, "I think she's dying." And then the second one was, "I can't believe you really did it, Rosie." The third one said, "I think she's dying, do it anyhow." So you heard that "I think she's dying" twice. So I guess one person was telling the other, "I think she's dying," and they were like, "Finish it, basically. Do it anyhow."
Yeah, they're straight Mortal Kombat-ing it.
Let's play it again.
Yeah, I could definitely hear the male voice, "Do it anyhow," and "I think she's dying."
But yeah, the Rosie one is a little bit harder to hear, so I really think you all should go to YouTube and look up Crime Watch Daily, Faith Hedgepeth voicemail, and because they can like isolate it better, and then you see the transcript with it, so it's like, it is suggestive, but I mean, there's a reason he's an expert. So what I think happened is Karina set her up. I think she said her stomach hurt at 2 o'clock and they left the club.
It was a classic excuse to get out of something. Yeah. Get you. Yeah.
And then they go back to the apartment and someone was waiting for them there. I think that Karina or one of the assailants sent the messages from Faith's phone to Brandon Edwards, like, "B, come over, like, Rosario needs you," to make it look like Faith really was alive whenever Karina left the apartment at 4:30. So I don't think Faith sent any of those.
That's why the downstairs neighbors heard all the thumping.
Because it was happening at 3 a.m. right after they got home, not at 4:30 when they heard nothing. But she was put up a fight. Like, there was bruises and cuts on her hands. Like, there was yelling. So I don't think it happened at 4:30. I think Faith was already dead when Karina left the apartment at 4:30.
And then why would you leave at 4 a.m. if you were sick? Yeah,
so if you were sick at 2.
Creating an alibi.
So that's exactly what I think happened.
Calling her to get her to get a ride. Yeah. Is all so, creating an alibi.
But they can't make anything stick, so.
God, it's so tragic, because really, I mean, you don't know the intimate details of the relationship, or what set her off so much if she wanted to hurt her, if that's what happened, obviously. Yeah. She's not a suspect, we're not.
Well, I think they're all persons of interest, but they can't make anything stick.
Right. But I feel like all your friend was trying to do, as far as we know, is get you out of a crappy situation with Eric or what's his face.
So who wrote the note, though?
Jealous. Somebody illiterate.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, Faith is gorgeous. Karina's all right. Karina jealous? Because Faith is, I mean, like, I know what it's like to be overshadowed by your, like, hotter friend, but, like, I mean.
I feel like it didn't.
But you don't murder them about it.
Yeah, well, obviously, Faith was trying to, you know, help her not settle, so she thought she was worth something. And listen, everybody doesn't look, you know, everybody's unequal. We just get a different lot. Yeah. But
who is the guy with the DNA profile? Because they checked, like, everyone.
Right, so anybody that would have lived close, and they were like, "Oh, well, somebody that used to live with her, and she went to like that sorority thing." Yeah. I was like, "And it, I don't really know
it's
anybody
gotta be
else."
Somebody friends with
profile.
Karina and Eric. If that's where true. In my brain, it's Karina, Eric, and semen depositor.
Oh yeah, we'll call him that.
Yeah, so he's got to be friends with them. So wouldn't they have been able to figure that out? Like, shouldn't have he been like a close connection? Because it can't just be like a random homeboy if you're killing people with them.
Right. Yeah. That's just not somebody you necessarily protect in a situation like that. Except for the fact that it's murder, so keep your mouth shut. Yeah.
But
you can't enforce that when
it's a stranger. I can't believe you really did it, Rosie. Makes it seem like she's more of a participant than just the person who set it up.
Yeah.
So,
well, honestly, that's the ultimate participant if you set it up.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's no way we can know what was going on between them, but sheesh.
The only way they're going to crack this is if semen depositor commits another crime and his DNA gets in a system and then he rats on everybody.
Yeah, I hope that really happens. 7 years is a long time.
So we just gotta wait, though. Like,
You would think that if you're a sexual offender, you don't do that one time.
Yeah,
like it's.
But
a
rape
compulsion.
Is really underreported, or maybe he learned to rape with condoms in the future.
Oh,
but
so annoying.
They left a mountain. Like, they will solve this. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
Somebody's gonna like 23andMe it, and your long lost cousin's gonna like rat on you.
Even if it's 40 years later, like the Golden State Killer.
Yeah.
Watch out.
Yeah.
We coming for you.
Police believe this case is solvable, and they have a lot of evidence. They're, like, right on the brink of figuring it out, but they're just missing some little connection or piece of information that would tip the investigation over the edge, give them the answers they've been looking for, and the closure Faith's family deserves. They insist that this isn't a cold case and that her murder continues to be investigated. More than $40,000 in reward money is available if you have any information that could help solve the case. You can contact the police 24-hour hotline at 919-614-6363. Or if you'd like to remain anonymous, you can call their local Crime Stoppers at 919-942-7515 or log on to www.crimestoppers-chcunc.org.
Thank you for listening to Sideline Sleuths. If you have any comments or questions about this case or just feedback about the show in general, you can find us online at facebook.com/sidelinesleuths. And if you haven't already had the chance, please rate and review the show on iTunes, Facebook, or any social media or streaming platforms available.